Steve, I'm just not really happy with how this podcast is working out.
Why? What's wrong?
It's just been the same kind of shtick for a while, and just I think your disloyalty, as evidenced over many, many weeks, has just been a bit of a problem for me and other people around the podcasting community.
What's John Cotton been saying?
I'm going to abolish your position as co-host.
You can't do that.
No, I can do that. I don't care that you're in a Chinese restaurant, Steve. So, listeners, we'll be back after the music with a pure podcast about the Constitution, Phil Willis, and the music of Nick Lowe. Welcome to Not Enough Champagne, a podcast that always insists on the card vote. My name's Corey Hazelhurst, and my reinstated partner in propaganda is Steve Haynes.
Corey.
I'm not quite sure how you're back, Steve. Turns out I didn't quite have the votes to abolish you.
I'm very grateful for that as well.
Not sure how that happened.
Incompetence on your part?
I'll just have to try again next year.
Oh, God.
So as you might remember, listeners, if you are a regular listener, we asked for questions about the latest shenanigans in British politics, and we got a question which is one we've been thinking about for a while, and one that we thought we could probably end up extending in a sort of midweek shot rather than just a section on an episode of itself, partly because it allows us to look back on not only Labour conference but Lib Dem conference as well, by Ian Robbo, who he tweeted pseudo-babble. And the question is, as we're 6 to 8 weeks away from a general election, how do you think especially Labour to Lib Dem switches in Labour Conservative marginals will vote? Not a biggie, really.
No, only something that would, the entirety of the election result would hinge upon.
So we better have a pretty decent answer. We'll start with maybe how the Lib Dems are going to try and win over those voters.
Okay.
If we think about Lib Dem conference, which in Brexit terms was, I believe, about 7 years ago, but was actually only, I think, 2.5 weeks ago.
Something like that. It does seem forever ago.
Swinson's first conference as Lib Dem leader, and the membership at that conference voted through her proposed change to Lib Dem Brexit policy. And the Lib Dems have moved essentially to being an explicitly revoked party. So the Lib Dem line now is that if there is a Lib Dem majority government, they would not hold a referendum, they would revoke Article 50 and Britain would stay in the EU without any further election. And they say that the general election would be the democratic event that they can use to overturn Brexit. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, one, this doesn't surprise me that the Lib Dems have moved to a more polarising position. The only logical kind of place for them to continue to move, to try and position themselves as being the true anti-Brexit party, as Labour slowly and somewhat begrudgingly starts to move towards kind of like a second referendum in some capacity.
We are in a second referendum. We haven't moved there begrudgingly, Steve. We are there. The tanks are on the lawn,
but
we just haven't said which direction they're firing in.
Yeah, the fact that Labour is now there, however long it took them to get there, means that potentially the Lib Dem message gets diluted. As such, I suspect part of this is kind of the logic is, well, what can we do to differentiate ourselves from Labour even more on the Brexit issue? Well, this is one way we can do it. And in some ways, it's I won't say it's clever positioning, because I don't think it's necessarily clever, but I think it's just they've kind of gone for a bit of a common sense get out clause in that they said, if we win a majority, which isn't going to happen. So therefore, what they're basically saying is, here's something we can basically throw on our Facebook ads in target constituencies, so that we can try and pull in those pro-EU votes, but not actually be forced to actually deliver on it in any forms.
Can't believe you said the Lib Dems aren't going to win a majority in front of Mark. I think maybe the better way of putting it is, it's a logical and clear position, you could say. Maybe added to that, in terms of on the positive side, for revoke, it does shift the Overton window a little bit, in that the Brexit party has shifted the Conservatives essentially to happily, openly embrace no deal. the Lib Dems, I think, picking up votes, and partly Labour's failure in European elections to pick up votes means that Labour's moved explicitly to a second referendum position. Partly it's to differentiate from Labour and show the Lib Dems are the more explicitly anti-Brexit party, but then hopefully pushes the window of what could be achieved in that situation.
Yeah. From a kind of like a pure political perspective, I think it's not a bad move for them at all. I'll give credit where credit's due in that regard. For me, the downside to this is that it continues, it's the rush of political parties to a more kind of like fundamentalist position, which they can then start yelling about and shouting to the rooftops to the true believers to try and get them on board, which increases kind of like the polarization in politics, which in turn has impacts on the rhetoric and the discourse itself, which feeds into lots of all kinds of nonsense. Exemplifies itself wonderfully with, as we discussed on the last episode, Boris Johnson's speech in the dispatch box after prorogation was deemed illegal, and Joe Cox was brought up and referring to the Surrender Act and all of that nonsense. We've got a bit of a spiral going, I feel, because and this isn't necessarily kind of both sides, is what I'm trying to get at here, because in a lot of ways the only way to counter that kind of polarisation on one end is to kind of go for it on the other end as well. But then you end up kind of reinforcing each other rather than kind of finding a solution, which in turn drives more problems over time. So we're kind of in a damned if you do, damned if you don't situation. So I think it's worth bringing that up just to say that there are potentially negatives to this. And they're not necessarily political, they could be more wider. But it's not a case of the Lib Dems are wrong for doing this, it's a complicated situation.
I mean, for me, the reason I'm very uncomfortable with the revoke position, and actually, I think especially the Lib Dems having a revoke position, is because, yes, it's very unlikely, almost impossible, that the Lib Dems are actually going to win the majority. Sorry, Mark. Arrogant Labour thinking here.
Yeah, what are our predictions, given our track record?
Yeah. But let's say if it happens, it will happen on 30 to 35% of the vote.
Yeah.
Now, you could very easily argue that a Lib Dem majority on 35% of the vote is a mandate for revoke. However, I think, especially given that the Lib Dems are a party who understandably and very justifiably and with very good cause have talked about the injustice of our voting system, have talked about the fact that they don't like our winner-takes-all politics. Actually, I think it's a bit of a can of worms that this is a bit of a thin end of the wedge for, well, maybe, actually, a Lib Dem government revokes Article 50, do then a future Conservative government try and say, well, we'll go for a no-deal Brexit on 35% of the vote, or we're just going to bring back the death penalty on 30 to 35% of the vote. Like, the whole reason why Brexit's been a bit of a problem, or not the only reason, but a big part of it, is because democracy is a process and not an event.
Yeah.
You don't just have one big vote and then decide everything based on that vote and say that's the will of the people. It's about trying to mediate between MPs, the electorate, the court, and come up with a workable solution. That's a big problem with it, is I think it leaves unanswered, and in many ways almost tries to exploit, the problems that we have in terms of first past the post, that I thought actually, obviously from Labour's point of view, Labour's been very relaxed about our rubbish voting system, but I thought the Lib Dems might have a little bit more of a mature attitude with it, I have to be honest. My other issue, which you hinted at, is this issue with broken promises. Now, yes, the Lib Dems have said we'll have a revoke if we have a majority Lib Dem government. Otherwise, we'll push for another referendum and we'll campaign very vigorously for Remain.
Classic Overton window type stuff. We adopt the extreme position, but we make yourself look available for the more moderate compromise.
But equally, this is going to lead to lots of people voting Lib Dem for a revoke, and it's not going to happen, and it's going to lead to more broken promises by politicians. Now, you can equally say, well, it's in the small print. On the other hand, and sorry to hark back to 2010, but again, a lot of the Lib Dem defence of what they did in government during coalition is because actually a lot of what they talked about doing in government in terms of focusing on top rate of on getting people out the tax rate, or the climate change activities they did in government, or the education reforms that David Laws say was involved with, is they said that, well, that was the main bit in our manifesto, that was on the front page, and that's why we focused on that rather than, say, tuition fees, which was seen as a more emotive issue, which again I think is a bit of a kind of Weasley get out, I have to be honest, which again makes me feel like these kind of voters we're talking about in this question about Lib Dem voters and Lab Com marginals, I think we've got a bit of a history with the Lib Dems using issues like tuition fees as a kind of wedge to try and maximise their voters in lots of different seats. And tuition fees is a good example of getting lots of votes in university towns, which then, as soon as it wasn't very politically convenient or people like Nick Clegg disagreed with the policy, it was very easy to try and get rid of it once they were in government. I'm not suggesting that will happen with Revoke. What I'm suggesting is there's a little bit of a pattern of Lib Dems using issues like this.
Yeah, so I think with this one, it's a slightly different situation to, say, the tuition fees fiasco, simply because there's an obvious middle ground that they can fall back to, which it's not like they went from Revoke to referendum, which is a dilution of your principles, arguably. They've gone from referendum to Revoke. So if you were to get into a situation where, say, I don't know, there was a coalition government potentially could be formed, and they were to go in and say, and then just cave in on the revocation of Article 50 in favour of a referendum. Well, it's something that they've clearly been talking about, and they've clearly been kind of like elucidating that time after time after time after time. So I don't necessarily think there's going to be an issue for them on that front, but I do take the point. There is, and it is potentially something that the Lib Dems do need to pay attention to, in that this is a classic kind of wedge issue campaign for them. It just so happens that it's also something they believe very strongly in, so it kind of works very nicely for them. But there are potential downsides to it, and they just need to make sure that they're actually prepared for it, because it has blown up in their face in the past. I was in the party when that did when that happened. It took them ages to recover, and it took Brexit for them to recover. If you have that happen again, potentially, I don't think it's likely to happen again, but it could be a killer.
I think the notion of the broken promises is not quite as strong as I think with tuition fees. I don't think the Lib Dems would go into coalition with the Tories and triple Brexit.
No.
We leave the EU and the UN.
We're just gonna put rockets onto the Great Britain and send it up to the moon.
That's exactly what's going to happen. So to kind of go back to the question, the Lib Dems, I think, are definitely picking up the Brexit position, as assuming this is how they are going to try and win over a lot of voters in Lab Com marginals, especially voters who, say, voted Labour tactically because they wanted the softer Brexit, or to stop Brexit, or to try and stop Theresa May getting her version of Brexit through, who then commentators for both Labour and Conservatives have both said that somehow, well, both parties in 2017 said they would honour the referendum result, and 85% of voters voted for those two parties. And so I think there's a lot of people I think want to see their vote count this time for an explicitly pro-Remain, explicitly stop Brexit party. So a lot of people I think might vote for the Dems in that situation, and that's what they are hoping for, I think.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because just before we go on to Labour and their Brexit position, because that won't take very long to explain, I thought Joe Swinson's speech was quite interesting, actually, in terms of looking at their policy position. And again, the Labour caricature of Joe Swinson is that she's Tory-loving, austerity-loving. Look at her speech and the other policies kind of apart from Brexit. She talked about well-being budgets. She talked about the importance of mental health, talked about the importance of the environment, in which actually, if there was to be some sort of Lib-Lab, either coalition or confidence and supply, there's a lot of business, actually, that can be done.
Yeah, there's plenty to work with there, absolutely.
On those issues. And actually, the two people who I noticed that she quoted were Robert Kennedy and Jacinta Ardern, who are both mainstream centre-left politicians. They're both from social democratic parties. And I think that's very, very interesting. Again, Joe Swinson, over the past week, has again seen the kind of outrider idiots on Corbynista Twitter, who I don't think are representative of Corbyn supporters or the Labour Party, but they've kind of there's been a resigned Joe Swinson hashtag and stuff, haven't they? Trying to present her as some sort of illiberal authoritarian. Actually, look at her speech. That's not what she's presenting herself as. That's not what she's saying. And I do think that's genuinely interesting, because I think before the speech I'd have thought, well, I'd probably put her in the Orange Book wing of the party.
Absolutely. Like, I think when, you know, the differentiating between like the Social Liberal Forum and like the Orange Bookers was a meaningful thing in the Lib Dems, I think Swinson would very much have been not full on Orange Book necessarily, but she's definitely of that ilk, to be quite honest, in an awful...
A sort of tangerine book, maybe.
Tangerine book, I like that. To a large degree, been a bit more of a... almost a caricature that's developed in a lot of ways of what Orange Book has actually aimed for and what they actually wanted to do. It wasn't necessarily...
Wasn't it the destruction of the welfare state and the privatisation of oxygen?
No, it was only Vince Cable that wanted to get rid of a government department.
Which iteration of Vince Cable was that?
This was the Orange Book iteration of Vince Cable, who literally wrote a chapter on it calling for
for the abolition of Tom Watson, or the Department of Business.
Swinson and a lot of the Orange Bookers, it's basically just redistribution by other means is the aim. What's the most efficient way we can get money moving? And in a lot of areas, according to them, the market can be helpful to that. Not necessarily the only means to do it, but something that can be more better utilised than might otherwise be done. It's still politics with a progressive end. It's just the manner in which it's supposed to happen.
It's basically the Adam Smith Institute, so we'll move on. or the IEA. Who funds the Orange Booker, Steve? That's what I want to know.
It was Paul Marshall. who literally edited the book.
The argument for... In terms of what Lib Dems are hoping is, they are hoping that if you really want to show that your vote is explicitly anti-Brexit, vote for them. Labour is basically doing the opposite. So Labour had its conference, started very well with the attempted abolition of the deputy leader in it. It went uphill from there. There was a big vote on Brexit on the final day, I believe. We're not going to talk necessarily a lot about the mechanics of...
How
the vote happened.
Let's just talk about what Labour's policy position on Brexit now is.
Okay, now
shall we role play this as though you're door knocking me to try and persuade me to vote for Labour and
vote for Labour, otherwise you're a fascist. I'm sorry. actually, I have a choose your own adventure book.
Oh God.
So essentially, the Labour position on Brexit is. That. Oh God, what am I going to say? Right. Thing is, Labour sort of has the most sensible policy, I think, of all the main parties. We want a referendum on Brexit in all circumstances. Mm-hmm. If we're in government, essentially we want to renegotiate rather than have May's deal, which is the worst of both worlds, where you are out of the institutions but having to adhere to EU law, we negotiate a soft Brexit. We essentially say we'll basically be part of the single market, we'll basically be part of the customs union, and we'll have a referendum, and either you'll have Remain or soft Brexit on the ballot paper. Now, although Labour as a party would remain neutral in that referendum, and although Jeremy Corbyn as Prime Minister would remain neutral in that referendum campaign, in part to stop how, obviously, Remain was hampered by a lot of the anti-Cameron votes that were probably cast for Leave at that point. Well, okay, party is neutral, but basically, almost all the MPs will be in favour of Remain, almost all the members will be in favour of Remaining, almost all the unions will be in favour of Remaining. Therefore, it would be essentially, well, we'd remain, wouldn't we? And even if people were to leave, it's the most sane of all the leave options. We've not put no deal on the ballot paper, because that would be a disaster. We've not put May's deal on, which we can't have, because it was rejected 3 times by Parliament. Therefore, what's your problem? You've been asking for this referendum for 3 years. We've promised we're a referendum. We're going to put Remain on there. It's fine. What's the problem?
The fact that you've basically said we'll work out what our position is actually going to be via a special conference at some point after the next election.
You can't possibly expect us to know our position before the election, Steve. We're a democratic party. We decide these things. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's...
The special conference thing is the silliest thing. The thing is, I think that explanation of Labour's Brexit policy is just about sane and coherent. The problem is, the premise of that explanation is that you kind of have to be a Remain party for that to happen, I think.
Yeah.
Because it has to be, well, we don't want to have Brexit. We didn't want to have this referendum in the first place. It's about a psychodrama in the Tory party. We are trying to manage it. The problem is we're just not saying that, and Jeremy Corbyn has refused to say if he's leave or remain. And it therefore leads to the incoherence, because Labour conference, a lot of good policies came out of Labour conference. Things like a four-day week, things like the Green New Deal, even Labour campaign for free movement, winning a vote to on free movement, which is excellent. It'll be interesting to see if it makes it into the manifesto. However, none of those are going to get any coverage, and didn't get much coverage during conference because of the nonsense about Tom Watson and our Brexit position. And they're also not going to get a lot of coverage in the general election, because everyone's going to ask the question of where are you on Brexit, on this Brexit election. The impression I get is Labour's going to try and blame a lot of that on unfair media coverage. Now, obviously, there's a structural bias against Labour in the media, which we've kind of hinted at before. But in a way, like, what Labour's been doing with Brexit for months has just been playing into their hands. It's like watching a batsman get out the same wave, wafting outside off stump to a ball they should be leaving and gloving it to the keeper or edging it to the keeper. And then complaining, well, you're not talking about the nice fours I hit before. It's like, no, because you've just made the same mistake again and you're out for 30 and you should be hitting 100. In terms of those, if we go back to the question of the episode, those voters in Labour, Conservative, marginals who might vote Liberal, Democrat or Labour. The Lib Dems and Labour are essentially in diametrically opposite positions.
Yeah.
The Lib Dems are putting most of their chips in the Brexit basket.
They're letting it all ride on blue.
Exactly. With kind of yellow flags sort of, on the... Yeah. Whereas Labour are basically saying, we have a radical policy agenda to fix the causes of Brexit, to transform the country afterwards. I think what they're hoping for is essentially to... Because essentially to try and remain neutral, to try and finesse their policy enough that MPs can basically say what they like on the doorstep. So Caroline Flint will say a very different thing on the doorstep on Brexit to what David Lammin will say, to what Steve McCabe and Sally Oak will say. I think in terms of a practical Labour government's perspective, I don't think that's going to work. Partly because I am not sure that a Brexit position like that is necessarily good enough to win Labour an election. Mm-hmm. I'm also not sure if we leave the EU, we're going to have enough money to do all the things that we want to do and transform the country. I think the other question is just a question of bandwidth. So Labour's saying within 3 months we'll renegotiate a new deal. Well, that's an interesting timescale. Within 6 months of coming to government, we'll have a referendum. Now, the Constitution Unit says that a referendum will take 22 weeks to legislate anyway. So we're going to try and... Is that going to be the thing we do on day one of a Labour government then, to put in that referendum? Because the whole point is, obviously, the Brexit takes up a whole government's bandwidth. That's all we will be doing if we win an election before Christmas. That's all a Labour government will do in 2020, is sort Brexit.
Yeah. I feel the Labour position is maybe that... I think, as you said, they're trying to play it so that everybody's got something they can sell on the doorstep when it comes to Labour MPs and Labour candidates. Fine. But I also think they're trying to position themselves in a way so that when... You know, you end up with an election and there's a possibility that the Labour has to, you know, work with somebody else to deliver a government in some form. And inevitably, the cost of that is a referendum. They can go, well, we wanted to do this. We wanted to do a full-on kind of renegotiation and all of this. But our hands are tied. The Liberal Democrats, the Greens, the SNP, that's... It is what it is, guys. They're trying to almost absolve themselves maybe of that responsibility with a kind of a position like this, maybe. I don't necessarily know if that is the case, but it feels like it's one potential thing, because it puts them in a position where they can just basically say, we're trying to be mature about this. We're trying to deliver a Brexit that is achievable, a referendum so that you all have a fair choice on what's actually on how we leave or if we leave. But everybody else is just stopping that from happening. We're the grown-ups in the room. Everybody else is acting like immature children.
I think Labour's trying to do a number. I think the different reasons of why people in Labour are acting how they are kind of... There's a few different reasons for that. I think in terms of the delegates at Labour conference,
yeah,
that for a lot of them, their loyalty to Jeremy Corbyn and the leadership overrode any concerns they had about Brexit policy. And so they were happy to give Jeremy Corbyn that kind of ownership of the Brexit policy. In many ways, fair enough. I think part of the reason why there is that faith in Corbyn is partly because of this transformative policy agenda, as I've said. I think it's also because a lot of Labour members do think that a similar thing to 2017 will happen. I think this is true of Labour members actually and a lot of people in Corbyn's office, whereas as soon as you have election campaign and Purdah, Labour policies and their agenda, and Corbyn himself will start to be seen and reported in a more objective light, and that will benefit Labour. They see, well, in 2017 we gained 20 points and they think we'll gain 20 points again. I would tend to be more sceptical of that, partly because...
It was a perfect storm last time of incompetence and everything on the Tory side. But equally, look at the Conservative government right now. It could easily be another perfect storm of incompetence. So, who knows, maybe they are
and
right.
And actually, I think Corbyn looks more sane than Johnson at the moment.
Yeah.
I can see the argument there, even if personally that's not quite where I would... And we've talked about this before, actually, in terms of the Tony Blair, Gordon Brown, New Labour being very cautious about an election, wanted to make sure they were definitely going to win with the very optimistic approach of Corbyn and the Corbynite left.
Yeah.
And in that case, it's more of a kind of cultural attitude, I think. And I think the other thing is, yes, Labour was spooked by the Euros, and yes, they changed their position. On the other hand, I think a lot of Labour figures are very aware that a European election electorate is not a general election electorate.
No.
And the people, yes, people who vote in European elections, they're going to vote on Europe. But in general, when there's other things at play, when Labour's saying how they're going to, say, scrap universal credit, they're going to bring in this National Education Service, I think they are hoping that actually that overrides, and that therefore, I think they're hoping, these Lib, Lab, where are they going to go? They're hoping they'll plump for Labour because they want to stop Boris Johnson and they want to make sure there's a Labour government first and foremost.
Yeah, I feel like the main thing there is actually the stop Boris Johnson element. I think everything else is kind of dressing. Like, I think the vast bulk of any tactical voting that does happen is going to be for that and that alone. But I think the numbers of people that you can bring on board, because we've got a really good policy agenda, but our Brexit positioning is a bit waffly. There's not that many people, I don't think, are going to be won over on that basis. They're either already voting Labour, in which case, yes, you're securing them, but you're not increasing your vote share. Or like they're people that are going to be put off by that, potentially.
My gut reaction is that there will be less people who vote tactically for Labour in this election than in the last one. What we don't know is, how does that translate in terms of seats? I think the other thing is, thinking about things like the Peterborough by-election we had earlier, that Labour does have a big ground game and is able to locate its target voters and turn them out. Whereas I think about, say, in Birmingham, yes, we had lots of Lib Dem councillors in Birmingham, even a few Lib Dem MPs a year or two ago, or 4 or 5 years ago. I'm not necessarily sure that the Lib Dems have a good enough ground game to locate a lot of votes.
Yeah, I mean, in the areas where they've always been traditionally strong and they've got their membership, absolutely they do. They'll be able to do it. But that's not necessarily easily replicatable across a lot of the other constituencies. They're left in their traditional issue of, well, how do you best utilise your resources?
Chuck Romano at Lib Dem conference talking about they could win 200 seats. And I think there is... and maybe Cleggmania problem of, if you spread your resources far too thinly,
yeah,
you might end up becoming a bit of a cropper. I mean, I think it's really hard to say. My instinct is there will still be a lot of tactical voting for Labour in these Lab Com marginals. I don't necessarily see a lot of people voting Lib Dem. My worry is it's enough to cost Labour, even if it's 5, 10, 20 seats.
I think an awful lot of this boils down to, what does Boris Johnson do in the run-up to October 31st? In the run-up to when he was meant to have left... we were meant to have left the EU, when he was meant to send a letter to, say, asking for an extension to the EU. All of those things are going to massively influence how the tactical voting happens here. The tactical voting is going to be stop Boris Johnson, stop the insanity that is a no-deal Brexit, and then once we've done that, then we can get back to trying to work out a solution. If Johnson goes off the deep end, does something ridiculous, or even just continues with the rhetoric that he's doing, doesn't even need to actually do anything more in terms of big actions, just continues with the kind of rhetoric and the political strategy he's doing, I reckon an awful lot of people will just go, you know, screw it. I'm just voting against the Conservatives to try and prevent a Conservative majority. And there's been some polling that suggests that could very well be the case. It was from the People's Vote campaign, so I've not delved into the details too much.
I thought all polls were funded by Tories, too.
I think it might have actually been done by YouGov, so technically both. But yeah, so People's Vote campaign, basically they said they'd found 60 seats or something like that, where kind of like in effect, tactical voting would potentially cause serious damage to the Conservatives. Like, if that happens, that's the Conservatives' shot. The problem is that's still not necessarily going to be enough to get anybody else over the line.
I'm just not really sure we should use that sort of like violent language on the podcast.
This is very true.
We don't want to radicalise anyone. Right, that's enough, isn't it? I think we did. Yeah, we talked about Labour's Brexit policy, and I didn't
cry. For 37 minutes, in fact.
Crikey. Well, that's been edited down. We are back on Sunday with an episode about pensions, and we'll be back then the following Sunday on October the 12th, and we'll probably be talking about Brexit again for the rest of our lives. In the meantime, we have a website, which is notenoughchampagne.com. We have a Facebook page, which is facebook.com/notenoughchampagne. Our Twitter handle is @nochampagnepod. James Cram designed our logo. You can follow him on Twitter @JamesCram. And Dave Depp is responsible for our theme tune, Plucky Good Times. I'm @PaperbackRioter.
I'm @AcousticRadical.
Happy plotting.